Why don't you give Wes an intro?
I don't know. I've never met the man.
Oh, God.
Welcome back to Hack Dissection. That's all I got.
That's all you got?
Yeah, what do you have?
That's about it, too.
Okay. Yeah,
that's about it.
Today,
yeah.
We have
a guest.
Yes.
Last minute, had another guest. They were traveling in Africa.
She's busy. Classic.
Rough connection, so we had to pivot a little bit. Thankfully, we caught somebody else who just happens to be on vacation, so why not interrupt that
and
drag him onto the show?
Yep.
Thankfully, it's a good friend of mine. So we have the author, co-author. Where's my camera? Over there.
I think it's this one.
Right there. Redefining Hacking.
Redefining.
Brand new book. Comprehensive Guide to Red Teaming Bug Bounty Hunting in an AI-Driven World. We have Wes Thurner, a.k.a. NOP Researcher.
You just doxed him.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
He's good.
Thank you.
Everyone has a clear net name now. It's ridiculous. The times have changed.
So, Wes, where are you at right now? Thanks for joining us. You're traveling across the world, yes?
Yeah, so now I'm traveling. I'm calling to you from Taipei, Taiwan.
Hot zone.
You know, wonderful backdrop of a nice hotel here. So definitely warm here as well, so I'm sure in the studio.
We are sweating.
It works out.
Little warm here, but we're going to get through it. I wanted to show you, Wes, last episode, Graham gave me all the swag from Cactus Con since I couldn't attend. And I did, last night I built the badge that you bought for me. There we go. The LEDs actually do work, so that'll go on the badge wall. The transistor that was supposed to be there wasn't there. I probably lost it on the floor here, so I just hacked it up, bridged the little pads there, and got it to work. So thank you for that.
Awesome. Did you get the nods working?
Yeah, the nods.
Yeah.
The hat clip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're just plug and play.
Yeah. Those I didn't have to do any work for. This one's I had to burn my fingers on, you know, for the micro soldering. I haven't done that in quite a few years. So it looks like garbage, but it works.
No, it's good. I think it's good.
I appreciate the dedication.
Yeah.
I still have probably like 5 badges that I need to solder up that are like years and years old at this point. So I appreciate that. Mm.
Wes, give us a little bit of an intro for yourself, since I didn't do a good enough job for that. Let us know what you're up to these days.
Ah, thanks. No. Just quick. I think high level, right? Is I spent 20 years in the military. With that, I was lucky enough, kind of more traditional route. IT kind of came up that way, and then eventually moved into offensive cybersecurity. So awesome opportunity there. Work with some agencies, do some really cool stuff. And then after there, I retired out, had a short stint on a red team over at Amazon, and then finally landed over at Intuit, where I've been for quite some time as a security engineer on a red team. So definitely loving kind of the career so far and the opportunities that it's made for me. During that time, throughout that process, while still in the military, worked with Barrett Darnell. Him and myself started a company called ThreatSim. So with that, we do a lot of CTFs and running workshops at various conferences across the country. We've been running pretty much about one a month pretty regularly at different conferences. So loving doing that. And then opportunity came up with Red Team Village that we've been a part of, Barrett Darnell, Omar Santos, and Savannah for 5-6 years, something at this point. So it was a couple years ago, Omar was like, hey, I want to write another book with you guys. Let's make this happen. So I was super grateful for him and Savannah to collaborate on this book, and super lucky to, just write a few chapters in this book. And I'm excited kind of with the, I would say like huge success, but like, just being able to publish a book, get it out there, and then see the sales and everything else. So super grateful for that opportunity. It's just, it's a fun thing to kind of wake up and see, but push it on Amazon and selling. So definitely loving it.
You said another book. So you and Omar have collaborated on a book before?
No, I wish. Omar is just a prolific author.
Oh, I see. He's written,
I don't
before.
Even know, 60, 70 books probably.
Oh my gosh. Really? I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's a library in and of itself. What does he typically write about? Like a lot of this, like practical, like this looks a lot like a no starch book, kind of like when you traditionally think of, it's like it, you've got like the code snippets in here. You'd say that's like typically like what Omar's work looks like.
He's very practical, very hands-on, you know. Cool. There's definitely some high-level stuff, mm-hmm. But as well as, you know, like kind of more applicable, like step-by-step, hey, here's how you do certain things, mm-hmm. here's how you set this up. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about red team infrastructure, all sorts of stuff like that. So we want to make sure you understand the concepts as well as, like, the details of how to execute.
Yeah, no, I really like books like this because, like, I feel like one of the toughest things for me as a practitioner is oftentimes I have a use case that I need like a tool for in my limited breadth of just like, you know, MFA sprayer GitHub is just like, you know, you're not going to find what you want necessarily. And so I have this whole list of like, here's functionality that I need for testing purposes that I intend to write myself because I can't find tooling for it. And so I really love when books, when practitioners are willing to share the tools that they work with frequently, because that saves me a lot of time hunting for quality software and scripts that do what I need them to do, because often the better I get at programming, the more likely I am to just throw it on the list of, you know, shit I want to script myself. And that becomes this massive time sink. So I really appreciate that. I was flipping through it last night and I just started immediately Googling some of the tools in here that are some of the scripts even that I haven't seen. There's a lot of ASCII art, you know.
No, it's definitely something that can be dangerous, right? It's like once, you know, like, hell, I'll just code that up. That, you know,
yeah,
it won't
right.
take me that much time at all. And 10 hours later, it's like still not done.
Yeah.
And I definitely feel for you of I hate going through the GitHubs and, you know, trying the first three versions of tools that just don't work. But no one told you that they didn't work.
Yeah.
So I always appreciate, you know, a curated list of like, hey, this is my go-to, or this is the last thing that I use. So I can at least like start at that point and then go from there and kind of learn, you know, the limits of the tools or kind of the techniques of that time. And then,
sure.
then decide, you know, hey, I need this one feature. Let me write that one feature up versus trying to do something from scratch.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to fork a project and write 100 lines as opposed to writing 1,000 and wanting to kill yourself. Sure.
Did you contribute to any of the tools that were published in the book, like for things that weren't quite there feature wise or anything like that?
I wish. I'm not that great. I think I have like one Nmap PR that's probably still open. cool. I'm just not that you know.
You're a process
prolific
engineer.
Of like. Definitely. I do a lot of that. But no, like I'm trying to think. Well, like when it came to tooling,
mm-hmm.
I usually found a lot of good tools out there, or now with like the age of AI, like I'll craft something up in AI, mm-hmm. you know, like utilizing that, tons of different, you know, like Copilot or et cetera, you know, what is it? Cursor
yep.
or a few other ones out there.
Yeah. The IDE.
And Yeah, I love those, super helpful, but usually when I'm done with one of those, you know, like it just works. Like, sure. I'm not going to publish that.
sure.
Half the code, I don't, you know, I'm not even sure like what some of it does, you know, yeah. but it, like it works.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I've been at lately with a lot of my stuff.
Cool.
But yeah, so I guess my way of where I give back to the community is not necessarily with like open source contributions. It's like with a lot of the teaching. So, sure. you know, again, yeah. with a lot of the stuff that Mike does, you know, kind of now with like Red Team Village, you know, I'm always out there just doing workshops, hosting CTFs a lot of times for free, just as we partner with different conferences.
Yeah.
And then like, just like we were just talking about a Cactus Con. So one of the big things that we did out there is we met up with a bunch of there's like a couple local colleges as well as high school teams that kind of traveled and participated in the CTF and then worked with them. So then we just hooked up their coaches,
mm-hmm.
Which is like free workshops for like, hey, these are all the workshops we have. Here's, you know, free for your teams, things like that. Just so I'm more on the education side, I guess, just trying to give back to the community and, you know, helpfully get people excited about cybersecurity and kind of like that gamified route of. Form and capture the flag.
Yeah, it is really fun.
Yeah, that's how like I ended up meeting Wes initially. Wes and Barrett was from the work that they did with Threat Sims.
Yeah.
So they were hosting the CactusCon CTF probably 5 years ago now. I mean, you guys have run it for a number of years at this point. Yeah. And I was doing research for the NCAA Cyber Games for running the CTF there, mm-hmm. and I was trying to find other people that would run these events in order to find out how to better structure them and present them to students.
Sure.
So I participated in the CactusCon event, and I just was like, hey, can I pick your guys' brain? And as Wes just mentioned, they're like super open to it. We synced up, just chatted on Discord for a while. They gave me a bunch of content to provide to the students, like old challenges, things like that they had used, mm-hmm. That they were no longer like implementing in their events. And so obviously I graciously accepted those, mm-hmm. and the students had a great time with it. And then, you know, they came back and they said, well, hey, we're doing this thing called Red Team Village. We have a CTF. If you're interested, you know, help develop some content for us. So it's like that, you know, giving back and growing out the community through those types of things.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the big things that, you know, I've learned is community wise, just reaching out and just interacting with people through things like CTFs and that sort of stuff is a great way to like meet new people that you may not have interacted with. 100%.
Yeah, it is. Any way that you can like inject some like interpersonal side into this field is like always really appreciated, because the work itself is very like isolating, I feel like, you know.
It definitely can be. And when you're doing like
you and your team, and that's about it.
The CTF stuff, Wes, like what's your like approach for the content, the challenges, those types of things? Like what do you bring into those?
So I think one of the biggest things is, you know, kind of like in that origin story of Barrett, myself, and a number of other folks like John, who's in Red Team Village, and a few other folks, mm-hmm. Zach, like we all played on a CTF team together. We love going out and crushing it. We're trying to win black badges at tons of different events. And just kind of going through that experience, right? We learned like what feels like a good CTF experience and what doesn't feel good, right? And then going through, you know, different challenges, you could tell what a well-made challenge was and what one that kind of sucked or was like too gassy. Sure. So with that of just, you know, being that player and in that mindset and kind of going through those like ups and downs of like competing, we just got the idea one day of like, hey man, I think we can run a CTF. Let's go ahead and do it.
Nice.
So once we started running the CTF, right, we just had that kind of core knowledge of what we liked and didn't like. And we didn't like, you know, like the guessy things, right? We wanted, you know, to kind of stare a player right in.
Yeah.
Stare a player in the right direction. Yeah. And not, you know, not to give them an answer, but just to, you know, make it so they're not just like hitting their head against the keyboard like, yo, I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah.
But from there, you know, we liked scenarios. We liked things that were more immersive, right? We don't want to like have a single challenge where you get, you know, you do something for 4 hours, you get a single flag out of it, you know, and during that 4 hour process, you're like, you're not sure if you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You think you're making progress.
Yeah.
You know, so when it came time for us to create these challenges, we liked, you know, if it was like a big complex involved thing, like we try to have some flags along the way just so you get that sanity check. Hey, you know, I'm doing mm-hmm. the right thing. Here's this. Those immersive kind of things, you know, I don't want you just to find like, what is this host's like operating system from a PCAP, like no mm-hmm. let's have like a whole kind of like story of network traffic in this PCAP so that you're answering like 10-15 questions, you're figuring out, you know, maybe like an entire attack and seeing that entire attack go through.
Cool.
So things like that, right, where it's just really immersive, where you're not just, hey, I'm learning how to use Wireshark, but I'm learning how to use Wireshark. I'm learning how to decode like SSL certificates. Then from there, I'm inspecting, you know, additional traffic. And then, you know, maybe I'm doing some kind of, you know, decoding of traffic or some, you know, decrypting of something to then understand, you know, how C2 is communicating or something like that, right? So it's just something more immersive that like you truly understand, like, hey, this is what's going on, versus like a one-off kind of, hey, can you decrypt the C2 beacon?
Yeah.
Like, no, like I want that to be step 12, right?
True.
Yeah. And then have like this whole story. So I think in that, it's super fun and you can have multiple people, especially if you're, you know, competing on a team, that way you can have, you know, people break off different pieces of like, hey, I'm working on this section here. Can you help me find this? Like, what other computers is it talking to while I'm working on this piece here? So just that ability to kind of bring, you know, multiple heads together to solve something, that was huge for us as well. So there's that aspect of it. And then the other one is like from our day job, right? Of, hey, we're doing red team engagements. We, you know, as much as we love the scenarios, it's like, hey, here's something that I actually experienced that I saw firsthand. So we're always talking with like other red teamers and like, you know, what, how'd you get in? How'd you do this thing? What weird thing did you come up against? And then we try to make those scenarios. So with that, it's, it might seem crazy at times, but it's truly like real world. Hey, this is what I saw. This is what happened. And this is why it's like super interesting. So I was super grateful for kind of, I think, the awesome people that I've been able to surround myself with that kind of share those stories and kind of build out a lot of those scenarios, and that they're willing to kind of give back to the community and help with the CTFs.
Nice. Yeah. I think one of the things I've learned too, you know, based on what you were saying, is when you decide to like run an event like that, a CTF, or even doing the teaching and everything, you kind of force yourself into that position of making sure they understand things better. So I feel like even though you're not competing, which when you do compete, you obviously learn the techniques or whatever the challenge is meant to like have you solve. But when you're putting it together, you really have to understand all the different ways that this could be broken and really constrain folks. So I feel like you learn almost as much like running the events and creating them than you do like being part of them or participating as well. I mean, have you seen the same sort of that same stuff make sense to you?
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, from that first day of from that first day, it was, you know, as we were kind of building out these things, you'd get a lot of people that just come in and break stuff and kind of break your CTF, break the challenges in a way that you weren't expecting. So there was a lot of learning that we did early on of like, how do we harden the CTF? How do we harden the gameplay? How do we make it more entertaining? At the same time, you know, because we're like limiting certain things that they're able to do. So we got to make sure it's like still realistic, still kind of fun, yet kind of, you know, think, you know, protected in a certain way, some of these. So with that, it was definitely a learning curve. But then as we were doing it for a while, we were able to kind of build out better infrastructure to kind of host things. So then we were able to kind of like dial back to like how much we had to do to protect something, how much we had, you know, to prevent one player from like breaking a challenge for another player. So with that, we were able to basically create like challenges that only an individual player had. So then you didn't have to worry about, you know, one player breaking it for like another team or something like that. So once we did that, we were able to kind of go back to that more natural state. And from there, it was, I think, a lot of fun. But like you were saying, I think when you have to build something from scratch that then you're expecting someone to break and then harden it in a way that they're not going to then break your infrastructure, right? That's like a huge learning process, and it takes time. And there's times where things broke in a bad way, and, you know, trying to get a cluster back up and running, or you know, bring some challenges back online. You know, there's a few events that we had, you know, where you just had like a bash for loop running of just like restarting containers or something, you know, like every 60 seconds, because it was just like, I'm sure I could fix this, but like right now, you know, we got like an hour left of this event, and it just has to be up and running.
Yeah.
So there's definitely things like that.
Have you run into this situation? We had this thing from the last CTF that we ran where we had some maybe more nefarious players playing.
Sure.
So
yeah.
There was some challenges that allowed like remote code execution on our containers and stuff. That was that was what it was meant for. And then we started getting alerts from OVH that our IP was being used for malicious content. Somebody like just ran an open mail relay just from the RCE that they had and just started like sending spam through the challenge container.
Yeah.
So we had to shut that down right away. But that's like the first time that I've seen somebody like try to utilize a CTF environment to like do
malicious stuff.
Yeah. I was a little upset with that, but also like, hey, you know, that's just part of the game, I guess.
No, that's super. I'd be super frustrated with that. I think for us, what we've been lucky enough is just, you know, I would just say young minds. We had some young minds, you know, that just, they wanted, you know, kind of resource exhaustion, kind of attacks, things like that. They wanted to try to tear some stuff down, crash containers. So like nothing too crazy. And like, I don't know. I feel like some people are just going to be like that. You know, they're just going to be a little mean. We've never really had anything where they've like launched attacks or did, you know, anything really, truly crazy from. I know they definitely, like, you know, routed some traffic through or did this or that, but nothing too malicious or anything that stuck out. So,
yeah,
nothing that bad. But there was, man, I'm trying to remember now, number of DEF CONs ago, you know, maybe, you know, we caught some players cheating or something, or, you know, probably just more like not as friendly on Discord servers, kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Especially during those virtual days. But other than that, though, like, it's been pretty benign. But every now and then, you know, you run some events, you'll see probably more cheating. That's where we kind of see the activity on. Luckily, like, our platform has a lot of, like, anti-cheat kind of things and other things to kind of alert us, that tell us, like, players are cheating or colluding on some on what they're doing. So that's more of a interesting kind of behind the scenes thing that we've seen, just seeing kind of the players collude. But at the end of the day, we don't mind, like, we do mind the cheating, but, like, if you're cheating and you're, like, 20 place, like, whatever, man, try harder. Like, you're just, you're not cheating well enough. But we're really strict, you know, like, if you're top 10 and we're giving out, you know, kind of awards or this or that, you know, we definitely monitor that, you know, much closer. We definitely focus on, you know, we're giving hints out, like, we're not going to give out hints to the top three teams, things like that. But, you know, we'll work with everyone, because, like, at the end of the day, if you come to one of our CTFs and you don't get a flag, like, I failed. Mm-hmm. And I feel terrible about that. So anytime I see, like, a new person kind of hop in, even if they, like, know zero about cybersecurity, whatever, I'll load up an easy challenge on the board just to make sure, like, I can go ahead and walk them through something.
Yeah.
Super easy, to make sure that they learn. So that, like, at the end of the day, like, I want you to come, I want you to sign up, learn what a CTF is, pick one challenge, learn something new about cybersecurity in general, whatever that is, submit a flag, get a little bit, you know, that dopamine hit, and then, like, go enjoy the conference. Go do whatever you want, right? It's like, as long as you get one flag, then I'm happy, and I feel I did my job. After that, you know, like, so if you're, like, the bottom, you know, in the ranking, like, yeah, I'll help you all day long. I'll walk you through all sorts of stuff. I'll talk to you about all sorts of challenges. I'll, you know, teach you if I have to on certain things. And that probably takes up, you know, a good chunk of my time. And then the ones in top, you know, I hate to say try harder, but I will kind of be like, hey, you're probably moving in the right direction. Maybe you're not, or you're in first place, man. Like, come talk to me when you move to second.
Right. So, they don't need the nudges if they're already near the top there. They're usually the ones that really are hardcore in that too. And are asking a ton of questions. But
five Dutch kids with their heads down for, like, three straight days. Yeah.
I mean, you've had, like, teams come in from different countries to compete. Like,
yeah.
What was that? A couple of years back for the Red Team Village CTF, you had, like, a whole team from Norway, Netherlands, like that.
Yeah.
We had some Netherlands. We've had, like, Swiss, Brazil, Mexico. We've had, like, teams from all over. And we're super grateful. So every year we get, you know, quite a few teams. And what we love is kind of become more family, where they'll bring gifts. So they're like, hey, you know, here's whatever kind of alcohol from my homeland. Here's candy. Here's this or that. So then we had to start bringing things, because, like, we felt bad, you know, like, so we'll bring, you know, so, like, what I call, you know, generic American, whatever, stereotypical American kind of gifts. But no, just so we can all kind of share and have that. And it's fun times, right? I love, let's just call it interesting tasting candy that they will bring, or definitely love, like, the variety of alcohols. Not a big drinker, but definitely, you know, love to sample and have a drink with some of the teams. So always grateful for that.
Cool.
But one of the things that you kind of mentioned earlier, Mike, I think, you know, like, the genesis of how we meet is any CTF kind of creator, organizer that I've met over the years, right? They're all in it for the community. No one's out here like, yo, I'm going to make $1 million running CTFs at conferences for free, right? So one of the great things out here is that there's just, like, enough of a landscape of conferences, and everyone has their own thing going on. So, like, when you came and approached me, like, yeah, I always love to talk shop. You know, anytime I run into, like, someone who runs, like, a CTF at some other event, even if it's just that's, you know, they only run it there, you know, once a year, and they're learning, you know, and slowly building out year after year. Or someone who runs, you know, CTFs at a bunch of places, like Roman from Meta CTF, right? Anytime I run into him, I was talking to him at RSA. It's just like awesome just to talk shop and everything, because like everyone is just there for the love of the community, right? There's no competition. Like, we're all in it there for the same thing of like, we want to build something awesome and we want the community to have a great time. We want everyone to like have fun and learn something. So like, it's I just love that, right? So like, there's the community aspect about like giving back, but then there's like that meta giving back amongst like the CTF organizer community. And that's a very small community of people that run CTFs.
The market is not saturated at all.
No. And yeah, I mean, obviously we could use more, and yeah, shout out to Roman and everybody over at Meta. They're always fun to hang out with. I saw them at B-Sides Rochester a couple months back, and then Hack Red Con last year when we were there.
Yeah.
A couple other places I think as well. So,
I don't know.
Yeah, so let's jump into the book a little bit here. I know that there's a story that we wanted to go over and pick apart a little bit, and I believe it's right from the very beginning of the book there, right in, I think, chapter one, right, where we're talking about a red team engagement involving AI, but not using AI on the attacking point, right? It's can you break us down, like, give us that story a little bit?
Sure. So obviously the names have been changed, and, you know, it's definitely from a long time ago. But no, one of the biggest things, you know, as you get like red team engagements and kind of determine like what the objective is, it can be a little daunting at times, you know. And this was obviously, you know, quite a while ago, obviously before I wrote the book. And it was just like my early foray into a lot of the kind of AI ML world. So with that, you know, we just got that objective of wanting to target our a AI ML kind of research division of a company. So if you're trying to target those AI researchers and you're looking at, you know, what is their attack surface look like, right? Just like think of an internal employee, you know, what truly, you know, attack surface are they going to have? You know, maybe they're publishing some blog articles, might not even be on a company blog, might be out on Medium or something like that. But it's very difficult, you know, from an outside to target them. And obviously, like, you know, a go-to is phishing. And that's kind of where, you know, that first kind of thought always goes. But again, you know, when it's only like five people that you're targeting, you know, phishing can be very difficult at that, you know, kind of crafting that message and, you know, ensuring it kind of lands. And especially on that kind of cohort of individuals, you know, what their skill set is, what they're kind of used to, you know, their ability to kind of click on phishing links. It's very difficult to target them. So we're just, we struggled, right? We reached out, did a lot of OSINT, looking, you know, any other kind of like bug bounty or this or that. Do we like, is there any attack surface, anything going on? And one of the things that we kind of noticed is we saw some activity during the OSINT process. We saw that, you know, reading some articles on Medium and all these other stuff, that we noticed that they were on one of these, you know, kind of public AI platforms. One of the things that we noticed, though, is just like the level of like commenting and kind of like reviewing different data sets and like on models and everything else. So we could kind of start connecting the dots of like, oh, they're interested in these kind of models, these kind of things. So as we kind of started picking out that pattern of like here where they're interacting, we noticed one thing, you know, since this is early days of a platform, you know, there isn't a whole lot of like safeguards kind of in place at the time. Obviously early days of AI, not a whole lot of safeguards in general. So with that, we just kind of thought about it, you know, kind of thinking like waterhole attacks or like organization confusion, right? So we noticed that we were able to create organizations on the platform. So we just went ahead and masqueraded as that organization that they belong to. So we just created that on the platform, claimed it as ours. And at that point, you know, we had like a valid kind of organization, and it was up there for, I think, only a day or two before we started getting some requests to join that organization. And lo and behold, it was some of those users that we were targeting. So it was quite surprising, like how effective that was for us. You know, just Google a company logo, slap it on there, and then like immediately they started. So once we had that, we're like, oh, okay, hey, early days, you know, we landed on this AI platform. We have the organization. We already have some employees connecting. We're able to go ahead and confirm that, hey, yeah, those are the employees, you know, but we had some concerns, right? Like, how are they connecting? Is this from home? Are they on their laptops, et cetera, right? So it took us a while. And obviously, we were a little hesitant, like, all right, what's this next stage of our attack going to be? Right? We're still kind of thinking some spear phishing stuff, you know, how do we do this? So at that point, I remember back to a Black Hat talk in particular that I was able to find, and it was on, if I remember this correctly, like the Keras Lambda layers. So with those Keras Lambda layers, you're able to get that remote code execution in there. Mm-hmm. And that was, took a little bit for us to kind of dig through that and, you know, watch the talk a few times. So then go ahead and build out some of those models and like embed malicious code within that Keras Lambda layer, and then be able to run that code, run that model and get that code execution. So once we kind of had that of like, okay, hey, here's a way that we can execute our C2 within this model, we then had to take a step back and was just like, what the heck is our model doing?
Yeah, and right. How are you going to get them to want that model that has all this malicious code, right?
Exactly. So it was super, so we kind of like had the cart before the horse at that point, and we had to go back, and it was just a lot of cramming and looking through different models. And at that point, I was like, I don't know what is enticing. I'm a security engineer. I don't know what model.
Yeah, why
don't
you just repackage something?
Exactly.
Quick question. You mentioned being concerned about where employees are connecting from to this platform. Is that was that a scoping concern, or were you just worried about collecting garbage credentials? Like, you know, if you get execution on their like home computer, it doesn't really give you anything. What was the concern there?
So yeah, the biggest concern, right, is that we wanted to make sure that it was like an employee laptop and not like an organization's like a personal laptop.
Sure.
And we want to make sure that it was actual employee, right? Because basically we just didn't want to run code on anyone else's device.
Yeah,
we
want to
make sure that we're still on company devices. So that was our biggest kind of concern there, right?
Yeah.
We weren't, you know, if we were malicious, you know, hackers doing whatever, like, yeah, who cares, right? So basically what we had is we did a lot of kind of due diligence of, you know, kind of currying that list of that organization, a number of like safeguards of making sure that our organization was in this like public but private, where you had, we had approved the invitation to get in. So
sure,
we made sure that we're only approving employees.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, the same thing with any kind of models or data sets that would get uploaded,
mm-hmm,
they would then be limited to just your organization, so they wouldn't get out. So we had a few different safeguards in place.
Cool, yeah.
But we were still worried about like the safeguards in regards to code execution on the laptop.
Yeah. That's always the challenge of staying in scope, but also like coming up with a novel attack path, it can get weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, go ahead.
So, no, you're good. So, like, the next step part of that was, you know, we did a lot of device fingerprinting and a lot of checks. So, mm-hmm, I don't remember exactly, but basically, you know, dozens of checks just to make sure, like, hey, this is truly a device that is owned by the organization, and we don't have to worry about anything. So, that took a lot of testing and significant effort. So,
sure,
obviously, like, this whole story probably takes place over a couple months. Because there's that long-led kind of campaign, and there's a lot of times that, you know, we weren't sure we were going to be able to execute, we weren't sure that we were going to be able to finish, and it's just like, you know, many times we're like, well, we'll have half a story for you, we don't have the whole story yet, but we'll at least have something.
Yeah.
So we had some, you know, definite, you know, wins along the way of, you know, certain things that we could push out, our new company policies of saying like, hey, you know, let's stay away from those public AI platforms or things like that. So either way, we finally got a device fingerprinting kind of safety checks, as well as, you know, obviously like OS kind of fingerprinting, determining, mm-hmm, you know, what kind of payload we want to execute, things like that. So finally we had crafted something that we felt confident, did tons and tons and tons of testing to make sure that it would do the fingerprinting and then only then kind of execute. And at first, you know, we did some simple stuff of just URL callbacks of like, hey, just call us back if this gets if this lands on this device. So then we could kind of get to that point of getting that level of confidence before we went to like a full-on C2. So we did some of that initial kind of URL callback with the model we uploaded, and we saw like activity and everything. We saw where it was calling us from, and it was hitting, you know, through our VPNs, it was hitting the right IPs. So we're like confident, like, okay, yeah, like we're getting interactions from devices that we own. So eventually we went ahead, did a C2 payload, got it to execute on our, you know, on a company device. And from that, you know, super simple, kind of straightforward stuff of, hey, let's go ahead and enumerate, you know, once we got that beacon back, what's on that host, what's going on. And there's a lot of stuff that just, you know, wasn't as interesting, right? You get
the classic.
Some of your hopes up though. Yeah. Like, oh, look at all this data, right? I'm like super excited. Like, is this customer data? Is this PII? Is all this other stuff? And it's just like, nah, man, it's properly anonymized data.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things, like, I'm so proud of you and disappointed at the same time. Like, I want the juicy stuff.
Yeah, that's real. That's real.
But no, you're doing the right thing, right? Yeah. It's just, so it was tough, right? A lot of roller coasters, a lot of ups and downs, and then just kind of digging through. But luckily, we're able to kind of grab, you know, some credentials, look at some browser history, look at, you know, some, you know, different cookies, things like that. And a lot of it, you know, was just kind of back to that drawing board of, all right, where do we go here? Because it, you know, from an outsider kind of looking in, you know, it's super cool what we did to get here, and it's a great story. But at this point, it's not that much different from, you know, a phishing attack. Like, let's get, you know, we want to get something that's truly like AI related. Like, you know, let's get after some AI, you know, whether it's data sets or some models, some other things. So we just spent a lot of time just digging through a couple individuals, just like all their data. And it was just little breadcrumbs, you know, that we're trying to piece together these things. Luckily, you know, we saw, you know, some opportunities to do some session hijacking. You know, I think a cool thing that one of the team members we're working with just kind of created a fake little pop-up, just kind of like, you know, the SSO login page, and from there able to grab the credentials. So with that, you know, just kind of lining up that time to, you know, match the behavior of the users, right? As, you know, during their workday, during the times they're normally on, let's go ahead, do some session hijacking, take their creds. Let's browse to some of the same internal sites that they're doing, you know, maybe whatever sites they're going to, let's capture those cookies and proxy through.
Sure.
Luckily, we found, you know, some of those internal kind of repositories that they're interacting with, and some of those like internal data stores. So from there, we're able to, let's just say, get onto another internal host at that point and just kind of browse and see what they're doing. And one of the biggest things with that is we found like another internal host that again had the opportunity to kind of run some Python. So like Jupyter Notebooks style thing. So from there, it was super easy to pivot to there and get like another foothold.
Yeah.
So like as that user, we had a foothold on that system as that user, which was again, so it's like, all right, now we don't have to mess around with like trying to, you know, essentially stalk this user during their work days and kind of proxy through all their stuff. Now we got a foothold on this one site, but then it's like, all right, what do we do next? Again, you know, we dug through what they were doing and digging through a lot of like Python, Jupyter Notebook stuff. And again, nothing that exciting, you know,
Jupyter
like
Notebook
they were
is so funny. That's so funny. I'm getting like flashbacks to CS1110. We like, they taught it in Python. We had to do Jupyter Notebook. I'm just thinking about like how you could like, yeah, you can just run code on it. Like obviously.
I love it.
Quick clarification from the initial the initial foothold. So you have a malicious ML model, right? And these employees are interacting with it. Are they pulling the model down and running it locally, and that's how you get the RCE, or is it through interacting with the web app? It's like that interaction is what gets you in. They're pulling
it
down.
It's from pulling the model down.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and just executing the model.
Okay, so it is very similar to phishing in that you've got the malicious attachment or whatever, or link. Yeah. You have that. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's just embedded within the model. So anytime the model runs, just that Keras Lambda layer will execute. So that's what we're doing to get that initial device fingerprinting and the C2 payload. then we're running on that host, but obviously, you know, they close that laptop lid, we stop beaconing back.
Yeah.
Can't really
that
do
doesn't
anything,
mean
so.
That the beacon calls back, like, regardless of the model being, it's not like they have to run the model to give you a beacon callback, right? It's like once they run it for the first time, the payload executes, and then you have a separate process that is, okay, cool.
As long as it's still in memory running.
Yeah, sure, then we're sure.
But obviously, you know, developers, they're super nice. They'll run it, you know, multiple times for you.
Yeah.
cool. You know, especially like when, if you lose it, you know, you just wait till after the weekend, you might get something Monday or Tuesday. So, super grateful for them. But no, that was one of the things, you know, and obviously, our model wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't use it as much as we would like, but it worked just enough. And then from there, you know, we spent a lot of that time just trying to figure out where to pivot to next and then utilize the credentials. At that point, you know, I believe it was a cookie. We did some session hijacking, and it was a cookie that then got us onto a Jupyter notebook site.
Yeah.
And then we were able there to execute another C2 agent and then just live there for a while. So at that point, we were then digging through all the data and kind of all the queries that they're running and what kind of training that they were doing. So at that point, this is where I personally was using a lot of AI to like help me understand like what is this model doing? What are they doing with this training? Just try to like reverse engineer like all the work that they're doing. At that point, you know, it was super interesting to kind of learn a lot of this stuff, as well as, you know, just that next set of challenges of like, what exactly are they training on? What are they doing on? But again, we had that same issue of the data sources were a lot of anonymized data. So from there, it wasn't as thrilling, because like you want this awesome story, and then of like, you know, what can we do with this?
Right, what's the impact from this? Like, what? Yeah, you can get all this, but if you get anonymized data, is that something of interest to the customer? Like, do they care that you have stuff that isn't, you know, tied to a specific person?
Yeah.
And then that's when we realized we were looking at it wrong, and it was just like, dumb it. Like, look at this. Like, they're training off of this data, and then now they're building this model to then run this. And it was just like, why don't we just taint the model? And then from there, so like all the times that we were like putting the model in and put it to the training thing, and basically like, you know, asking ChatGPT or whatever, like, hey, what is this model doing? What are they training on? What are they doing this? Finally, like Donna, I was like, why don't we just change the values? And then sure enough, we were able to go in there, and because there's Jupyter Notebook and we had write access, we went ahead and just altered some of the values of it so that the training data that was coming out of it would, you know, essentially be biased towards a different way. So at that point, it was just like, oh, this is exactly what we needed to do. Like, you know, like just kind of being stuck in that red teamer mindset of like, I need to go after the crown jewels.
Yeah.
You know, let me pull out this data. Let me do all this other stuff. And it's like, no. The objective was to target these AI researchers and what they're doing. And that's like the ultimate thing, is to be able to take that data.
I see. So instead of going after the data, you're just messing with their models so that the work that they're doing is now being
fruitless.
Yeah, it's just not being as effective or whatever that they were trying to actually accomplish.
Exactly. And now think of that, you know, from a company's perspective. It was like, you know, I'm training this model, and I'm going to, you know, put this to be able to answer these questions for customers, but now it's biased in a certain way, right? Yep. You don't want that. And, you know, you have good data. You're just not sure, you know, where it went wrong in the training process to go there. So that was just a huge win for us.
Yep.
And again, you know, it took us a couple months to kind of make all of this happen and put it all together. But there's a lot of learning along the way, and that, you know, kind of here was, you know, that forcing function along the way of like, I need to learn all this AI and ML like to be able to execute on all this. But then it kind of like sparked of, you know, everything that we're doing now with, you know, building out like agentic model systems to do all sorts of crazy things like writing reports, all sorts of other stuff. So it was just that early on forcing function, you know, a number of years ago, to then be able to make it happen, to kind of, you know, where we are now today with doing all these kind of other crazy AI stuff and kind of building our own AI system. So it was a good experience for everyone involved. It was super fun, but there was, I don't know how many times I felt like I, you know, kind of hit a plateau. I'm just not sure. You know, I don't know what else we can do. I'm not sure what that next step is, but again, just beating your head against it, looking at it. And then honestly, like I have to think, you know, like ChatGPT, all the other different kind of AIs, a lot of asks along the way of, you know, what is this? How does this work? You know, asking those kind of questions, how would an attacker use this to do something malicious? All those things that it definitely kind of pointed me in some right directions and helped me kind of get over some humps. And then, of course, always love the, you know, archives on Black Hat Talks and some other kind of early researchers and what they, information that they put out there. And it's just one of those things, as you look at, you know, some of the different safeguards of models kind of going forward, you know, that are now like read only, that, you know, there's no chance for code execution. There's, you know, all these different other kind of safety checks as things have progressed that you can then, you know, turn around and implement, you know, in company policy of like, hey, you know, we're not using this. We're only using, you know, internal repositories. We're only using this type of models, you know, et cetera. So it's huge learning curve, and I appreciated the opportunity, as frustrating as it might have been, kind of going through it all.
Yeah, that's a really creative proof of concept. You know, manipulating the training data. I feel like a lot of internal pens, red team engagements, you get stuck. Like you said, they're very point to point. You just kind of like move and shoot, move and shoot, move and shoot until you have DA or enterprise, and then you're done. Mm-hmm. But like that. What you guys did, like, is also a perfectly valid, like, squandering the resources of the target is like a perfectly valid method of attack. So that's like, that's really intriguing. That's very creative. I like that. I was hoping to pivot back to the book and maybe wonder a little bit about how AI is integrated, if at all, into the rest of the book. If you guys are kind of talking about it as a force multiplier, or if you're introducing tools that leverage LLMs in any way like that. How? Because it does say, a comprehensive guide to red teaming and bug bounty hunting in an AI-driven world. So are you focusing on attack paths, targeting LLMs, or like I said, are you looking at them from like a force multiplier perspective? How can you leverage this to increase your efficiency and efficacy?
No, that's a great question. And I always go back to, you know, think about like the early days of like Google, right? Or even like Wikipedia, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, hey, here's a new tool. How do you leverage this tool?
Yeah.
Right? Not as like a replacement for you. And that's one of the biggest things with AI. Like as we went through this book of, in a lot of the different sections, we just have ways to leverage AI to make it, to make yourself more effective.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of talked, I think we talked a little bit earlier, you know, about writing code. Utilizing AI, different, you know, IDE integrated solutions. Again, just to, if you need to come up with that payload, it might not exist, and you don't want to spend.
That's
you
true.
Know,
saves a lot of time.
Learning.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and the more you use it, the more you understand how to interact with some of those prompts, so that you don't hit some of those safeguards.
Yeah.
So that you can get that kind of malicious code that you really want. But with that, like, we have a few, you know, we have some sections that talk about like attacking or some of the risks, you know, that you need to be aware of with different large language models or AI in general, like as you're using it or as you come across it, you know, whether you're red teaming, bug bounty, et cetera. But our biggest thing is just leveraging it. So how do you use it as a force multiplier? How do you just make yourself, you know, whatever the kind of going number is, 20% more effective, 25% more effective.
Yeah.
at your day-to-day.
Cool. That's really cool. One of the funny things that I've been doing with LLMs recently is like they are like they operate with those safeguards, but like so for some reason, if I like ask an LLM, how would I exploit this? Right. Oftentimes they're like, we can't let you do that. Or I can't explain how to do that. I found that most like publicly accessible LLMs are very, very willing to help you if you are a blue teamer. So if you're like, hey, I see these conditions present in my network, is this a problem for me that I would need to remediate? They'll be like, oh my gosh, yes. Like these conditions present this potential attack path, and this is how the threat actor would exploit them. And so this is what you need to do to fix it. They'll go right out with it. As opposed to if you're like, hey, I see this on a box. Can I use this to pop the box? They'll be like, well, I shouldn't tell you that. But if you're like, is this a problem that I would need to fix? They'll be like, yes, 100%. And here's how you should do it. Or here's how it would happen so you can fix it. So that is funny. The lack of context, or like if you can manipulate the context that the model is operating in, mm-hmm. and it's still very easy to dupe them.
No, it's amazing. Probably some of the best individuals that I've seen in regards to like some prompt injection, mm-hmm. prompt engineering stuff. A lot of lawyers.
Oh, that's hilarious! Yeah,
being good with words.
Yeah,
right? and just those interactions and some of that logic, that a mix of logic mm-hmm. in there. But no, whether it's changing that perspective, or some of those traditional like Crescendo attacks, mm-hmm. you're able to kind of derive like what you want out of it. Made a very MVP C2, just asking it like, hey, I just need you to like have an agent that runs on a computer that just will execute a command,
yeah.
and report that information back, yeah. to a web server. And just the way you describe some things, like,
yeah.
it'll go ahead and make a MVP, sure. for you. And
yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
No, not at all. They'll build pieces too. I really like, I find the more you use LLMs, the more you find out what they are like good at doing and not really good at doing. And I find like, it's a lot easier to organize a piece of software, and then mm-hmm. function by function you can kind of pair code with the LLM. But if you try to trust it with tying in other variables or libraries that you've written yourself, like when you get into that multi-file stuff, it's getting better, but it's not really like it's not really there yet. And I find that like you start running into a lot of problems. I've been experimenting running LLMs locally. Hopefully mm-hmm. there's no code execution happening on the back end that I'm unaware of. But it's a really interesting, if you use like LM Studio, they'll show you the thinking. Mm-hmm. And so like as the LLM is running, it will output its like thought process, the logic that it's going through. And I've asked LLMs to do things with a specific condition, like omit this or and I'll see it like loop. It'll just get caught in an infinite loop. And there's just like things that it's incapable of doing. If you don't provide the prompt appropriately.
No, you made a good call out. Some of those where you can see the reasoning, like you'll see it a lot where
yeah.
they will tell you like exactly what you want,
mm-hmm.
and then at the last minute their safeguard will kick in and be like, oh, I'm not allowed to show you that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But you'll see it in the reasoning, like, yeah. oh never mind, I got all the code that I needed, like, you're yeah. good,
thanks. I'm out of here.
But some of the stuff that I've been digging into now, right, is just a lot of the agentic mm-hmm. AI and like the safety around that.
Yeah,
so huge shout out to the latest version on like the MCP stuff, where they like included OAuth, right? But there's a mm-hmm. lot of that server to server MCP communications that was happening that mm-hmm. just didn't have auth or was poorly implemented.
Yeah.
Some of the controls yeah. around it. But what I'm loving right now is just like a lot of the old kind of attacks are new again. So it's like prompt engineering, right?
Yeah.
Plus SQL injection. Right, so you just have like an MCP server that's yeah. sitting out there that just does database queries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it has like no protection whatsoever.
Oh,
and it's just like a little bit of prompt in engineering to then get like a SQL injection to then reach out, run that query,
mm-hmm.
to pull whatever additional data back or get some code execution over there. And it's crazy
yeah.
that to give a model or give a system, this agentic system, the amount of control that it has, and essentially like no limits whatsoever, right? It, you know, in this particular case, what they call it, it's just, you know, too much agency, right? Mm-hmm. That this agent can do whatever. There's no safeguards in place, no limits on what kind of queries it should or shouldn't be performing.
Yeah.
Typically, it has full access to the entire database, which is just crazy. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, that I feel as we move into, you know, some of these different kind of communication protocols that we have in place, we're kind of taking a big step back.
You know,
maybe like 5 years.
No, ago. I developed this viewpoint when I was like just getting into the field, and I'm now scared that it's going to be my philosophy until I get out. But like as technology advances, like simpler, like primitive TTPs are going to become the most robust, you know, like if you have all of the security controls that make it hard for me to like just spray an employee, like phishing will still work. If I can't, you know, crack the data center, I will go there, you know, that kind of stuff. Sorry, I cut you off. That was really rude of me.
No, that's all good stuff. Yeah, no, it is just crazy, right? Just as complex it is, you know, a lot of the simple stuff works, right? Like if you, perfect example, I'm sure that we've all seen, like, what is it, lock picking lawyer, right? Very expensive locks defeated by like, oh well, here's this Coke can that I
was one of the things I was concerned with too, with the, you know, the rise of the LLM stuff, the AI, the agentic stuff everywhere is, you know, what was old is new again.
Yeah. Right?
So a lot of these things that have been really locked down over the past few years due to enhancements in security, now everybody's throwing out the AI.
Yeah, we now have a broken LLM that can execute commands.
You know, the red teamers have a field day on it until it, again, gets more comprehensive, more locked down, a lot more time and effort goes into
that.
We'll
see. Text generation is already so broken. I'm surprised that the command execution got tied in. But I guess they do have to keep doing. Feature ads must continue, lest the singularity hype die before they turn a profit, you know?
So,
such a profound statement.
Wes, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your vacation to talk to us. For everybody else that's paying attention, Redefining Hacking, that's the book that's out. We will have many copies of this at Red Team Village at DEF CON.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we will have Wes there if he's willing enough to maybe meet with folks, you know, get a signature.
Make him
on
sign
there.
Bucks till his wrist snaps.
I gotta get one on mine. So I hope that you enjoy the rest of your vacation there. Looking forward to seeing you in a little over a month and a half.
Oh man, yeah,
It's
August.
Getting close. So,
it's like 45 days.
Yeah,
who's counting? Appreciate the shameless plug on the book, and definitely alluding to, I believe, Omar, Savannah, and myself. We haven't quite nailed down all the details, but we'll be signing the books and doing some book giveaways and all that good stuff. So,
very cool.
Come check us out in the Red Team Village. We'd love to, you know, definitely talk shop with anyone. And then if you can, you know, come get a copy of the book, or if you already have one, you know, we'll all sign it. So, thanks.
Nice.
Sounds good, Wes. Take care.
I love you, Wes.
Awesome. I love you too.
Never forget that.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate that. Just don't tell Mike.
Cool.
But thanks a lot, Mike. Love you too, man. And both of you have fun, and hopefully get you out of that hot studio.
Yeah.
Beast mode. Yeah, it's 85 right now. I've been watching the thermometer tick up. It was 82 when we started the episode. It is 85 in the studio right now.
We're on our way out.
Well,
it's a sauna.
With that, I'm gonna actually go to bed. So,
good night. Good night.
Take care.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
See ya. This has been Hack Dissection with Graham O'Donnell and Mike Lisi. Oh.